U.S. Department of Transportation has outlined five areas of safety when it comes to transport. The first is the safety and convenience features era between 1950 and 2000, which included the development of cruise control and seatbelts. Two is the advanced safety features area from 2000 to 2010, which includes forward collision warning and blind spot detection. Three is the advanced driver assistance features area between 2010 and 2016, which includes the development of automatic emergency braking and lane centering assist. Four, the partially automated safety features area, which we're actually currently in, and which has included the development of features like adaptive cruise control and self-parking. And number five, the fully automated safety features area, which is predicted to start after 2025. The efficiency, convenience, economic, and societal benefits that come with autonomous drive are, in theory, a great reason to invest in this technology. However, despite these theoretical benefits, Pew Research has shown that only 26% of U.S. adults think widespread use of autonomous vehicles is a good idea, 44% think it's a bad idea, and 29% of those surveyed aren't even sure if it's good or bad. Top of the list of concerns people have about autonomous vehicles is safety. How willing are we as humans to give up control to a machine? And if we're talking about autonomous ride shares, another major concern is passenger privacy and security. In today's expert episode, we focus on these two things, autonomous vehicle safety and privacy. To do this, I'm drawing on previous Future Car conversations with two autonomous drive experts, Felix Ondlauer and Mark Rosenkind. Felix is the VP of Mobility Solutions at NEVS, N-E-V-S, a company hoping to develop autonomous vehicles that are meant to be shared while maintaining privacy when you want it. And Mark, who at the time of our conversation was the Chief Safety Innovation Officer at Zoox, a company hoping to provide autonomous mobility as a service in dense urban environments. My conversation with both mainly focused on how the safety and privacy of autonomous vehicles can be managed in a way that appeals to the consumer and convinces them to become an autonomous vehicle passenger. One of NEV's big goals as a company is to reduce the number of vehicles on the road by offering an alternative transportation option, ride sharing in their autonomous vehicles. But why pursue the ride share route when most people prefer the privacy of having their own vehicle? Felix explained why full autonomy for private vehicles may not be the way to go.
What we are seeing now, I think, is that a lot of companies get to the realization that if they want to stick to their current business model of selling privately owned cars to private customers, then AD is probably not as valuable as they've thought. So they make either the decision to go for new business models or they go for the level two, level three autonomy that fits better to a privately owned car. If you would just add autonomy to a privately owned car, then the problem you can probably solve is, while you sit in your car, you can take off the hands of the steering wheel. And we don't think that that's the problem we should use that technology to solve. So we believe that maybe the three fundamental problems that we need to solve in cities is congestion, the amount of traffic jams we're stuck in, the land area we use for car-related infrastructure, so mainly parking. And the third one is to transition from to electrification is simply not going fast enough. So we think that with the right business model, autonomous vehicles can actually solve all those three problems.
So if these are the problems NEV's autonomous vehicles are looking to solve, how can they, as a company, incentivize individuals to share rides and give up their private vehicles?
We think that we need to have purpose-built vehicles. So the autonomous vehicles you see driving around, mostly the standard passenger cars with an add-on retrofitted AD sensor set, those vehicles were built with the customer in mind that knows everyone in that car. They are not built to be shared amongst strangers. People are not comfortable with that. Whereas if you really make custom-built autonomous vehicles where you focus on providing privacy to every individual passenger, then you can actually create an interior in a vehicle that makes people comfortable sharing. We think that it's a lot about the space in the vehicle that determines if people are willing to share a ride.
And what exactly do these purpose-built vehicles look like?
So the interior can transform into different modes. And when it's in private mode, it has four seats in two rows where the interior of the vehicle is divided in four equally sized cells. And between two seats of one row, we always have what we call a privacy wall. So it's a dividing wall that can slide up and down. And in privacy mode, it's up. So it's this kind of semi-transparent wall that you see that someone is sitting behind, but you can't, for example, read the other person's screen. And then you have, for every of those cells, you have an individual door. So if there's already three people in the car and you are the fourth to be picked up, then only your door opens. You get your individual seat where, you don't disturb the others don't disturb you. What we're aiming for is the same level of privacy that you would have in your own car, but in a shared ride.
Privacy is good, but another dilemma that arises from sharing autonomous vehicles is that of security. How do you make sure a passenger's security is protected when they're sharing a vehicle with complete strangers and no driver?
A question we get a lot about our shared privacy is, okay, the privacy walls that we have between the passengers at the moment, they are just big enough to give you that feeling of privacy. But a question we get often is related to female security. So as a woman gets onto our service in the evening and then has to share the ride with a couple of men in a really confined area and would probably not feel comfortable in that. And if you would try to solve that problem just in the vehicle, then you would have to have really safe dividing walls. Whereas if you look at the whole thing and the whole service, it's clear that these situations mostly occur at nighttime where we don't have full utilization of our fleet anyway. So it's much easier to simply send everyone their individual vehicle, even if they just book one seat, and by doing so, let this situation never happen.
So the security of their passengers is something NEVS has taken into account when it comes to their vehicles. But what about protecting the safety of passengers, pedestrians, and other vehicles and infrastructure when it comes to autonomous drive? Mark from Zoox explained how the automotive industry has historically been more reactive when it comes to safety, and how he's hoping the autonomous vehicle industry can veer away from this standard and be more proactive.
So let's just start with auto and reactive for most of 100 years. And that is, crashes are going to happen after the fact. How do we figure out, to make things safer? And so that unfortunately means we're just acknowledging crashes are going to happen, and how do we help more people survive them? Proactive is when we're thinking, how do we do safety efforts ahead of time that prevent those collisions, injuries, fatalities from happening in the first place? And so I like to point out our sort of prevent and protect basically says the ultimate safety is preventing that crash from happening in the first place. And so new technology that allows you to have automatic emergency braking so you don't crash into things. Your planning so that you actually don't get close to where there's something that's going to be a risk for you, right? That it automatically adjusts your speed for whatever the weather is, et cetera. So those are the kind of proactive things that you can do that help you deal with situations that prevent those crashes or injuries or fatalities from happening in the first place. And aviation's just done a great job. I mean, they had a couple decades ago some horrible crashes with too many people losing their lives. And they said, what are we going to do to try and make this better? And so whether it was in training or procedures or technology, they did whatever they can. And I point out, commercial aviation went 12 years in the United States with no single fatality. 12 years with zero fatalities. We're in crisis on the road. If we could get to that level of safety, it would be superb. Right now, 95% of all fatalities in transportation happen on our roadways. How do we use those lessons learned, apply them to the roads, and start saving those lives? In aviation, they do not compete on safety. It's not a competitive issue. It's like, we're going to get together and deliver safety. In the auto industry, they sell safety, right?
Yeah, certainly Volvo.
And all the other cars, look at this system, and this one's going to be, right? And again, I ran NHTSA, which does the new car assessment program, NCAP, right? Those are stars for cars that you see right there on the window of the vehicle. So you're literally, is it a 5-star or 4-star? You would never get on an airplane and say, gee, where are the stars next to the cockpit so I can see if it's a 5-star cockpit or a 4? You don't compete. You want everyone to be 5-star, right? And so I think that's one of the basic things. And it's not that the auto industry doesn't collaborate on things, but I think sometimes the going in is, you know, always trying to up. And so as administrator, when I was at NHTSA, one of the things we talked a lot about is how do you democratize safety? There really should be one level for everybody. And so whether that's making pricey safety options, automatic emergency braking, available for everyone, or one of the latest issues you see is, guess what? Crash dummies should actually represent our population and our society, right? Not just 95% male or 50% male. We really should have one level of safety for everyone. You know, whatever gender you are and whatever, wherever you're sitting in the vehicle, we need to get there. And I think there's clearly room in the auto industry to emulate some of the things that have happened in aviation.
So how do you get the automotive industry to work together to improve safety? And should there be a central body and or the government involved?
So having been in a lot of different environments, you know, board member at NTSB, an administrator at NHTSA, and a scientist at NASA, I've had a chance to see the safety system from a lot of different angles. And what your question brings out is there is no one group responsible for safety in the auto industry. It's all these groups playing their role. And what you just identified is, in fact, one of the critical roles for government, for NHTSA, for the Department of Transportation, to be able to step in and say, look, these are the big objectives. Here are some specific things we expect everyone to do. Sometimes that's regulation. Sometimes that's another policy. Sometimes it's something else. And then how do we reinforce and incentivize people to do those things well? Because that brings safety to everybody. And so if you don't have every sort of player, every stakeholder fully engaged, then you're going to have gaps. And so to your point, some of those changes have to come from government. But you know what? Industry does that too. They do best practices. They don't wait for the government to say, you know, regulate us. We're going to do this. And I bring this example up all the time. As administrator, we challenge the industry to make automatic emergency braking standard on all vehicles across their fleets by 2022. I mean, this was in 2015. It would have beat regulation by 4 or 5 years if they could do that. And 20 of them signed up, accounting for 99% of all the new cars manufactured, and they're pretty much there. I mean, we're in 2022. So that's the democratized safety. You know, government didn't have to regulate, but it gave the challenge, and the industry stepped up. Now, guess what? You could do it faster. You could do it better if you want, but at least everyone is going to get that democratized safety. Everyone's going to get that level of automatic emergency braking that pretty much equals the playing field for everyone.
Safe system approach. What does that mean, safe system approach?
This came from Sweden and some wonderful work they've done that looks at the system. Human choices and errors contribute, and people are screaming about the statistic, but 94% of the last cause in a crash is something the human chose or an error they made. And the safe system basically acknowledges, well, errors happen. So what can we do designing the roadway system or speeds that help us control those kind of choices and errors so they don't end up in somebody losing their life? So that's the more system approach that gets to road design. I mean, the classic example are roundabouts that control speed, for example, cameras that sort of maintain that. And in Sweden, they, using the safe system approach, they've cut their fatalities down by 50%. So, I mean, we know it works, and it's now being more emphasized in the DOT proposal and for the last 5+ years or so, maybe 10, in the United States.
So the safe system approach acknowledges that human error will inevitably occur and tries to mitigate the consequences of this in a proactive way. But how does this work in practice? One way could be to section certain areas in a city and create detailed plans for autonomous drive within those specific spaces, accounting for anything that may possibly go wrong, and planning for how accidents can be avoided. Let's listen to Felix and Mark break this idea down a little bit and explain how this would work with their respective vehicles.
In Europe, in order to get a permit to drive around, you have to define an ODD, so an operational design domain, in which you can claim that, okay, everything that could reasonably occur in this area, we can handle, and so we're safe. The vehicle wouldn't be allowed to drive out of this area autonomously, and that, of course, also means we can only provide mobility needs that start and end in that area. But this, we think, will be possible really soon. And I think that's also to your initial question about what's happening in the AV industry. I think a lot of companies are realizing now that this AD level 5, so you can drive everywhere safely, is really far away. And I really agree. But as soon as you limit the area that you operate in, then it becomes much, much easier. And so we think providing a service in a defined area will be possible in 2 years. From then on, fleets will grow, areas of operation will grow, and use cases, how people use that kind of service, will grow over time. But when we reach that point where, okay, in the whole city I can drive autonomously and I don't need any safety driver, then it will ramp up super fast because it will be cheaper and better than the existing solution.
Zoox has the AI built into the vehicle, and we have mapped the area we're going to be driving in. And so any city that maintains its infrastructure, which means street lines are painted, it's got stop signs that are visible, that your flashing lights really flash the right color. If it just maintains that, then we're good. And we've always pointed out that the better your infrastructure is, then the more accurate our map is, and the more accurate our perception in the moment is going to be, the safer and better it's going to be able to drive. When you get to the connected vehicle, whether it's vehicle to vehicle or infrastructure or pedestrians, etc., again, our vehicle is actually created to be able to operate on its own with its perception systems, etc. But when those become more commonplace, then we can incorporate those, and they'll just help expand our envelope for operating, for safety, et cetera. But we don't want to have to rely on a big city investment to allow us to come in and operate in their environment.
And what about the infrastructure in these cordoned off sections? Mark broke down how it can be adapted to align with the safety standards of autonomous drive. He also described how communication with first responders can be managed with autonomous vehicles.
Any communication system between the infrastructure, so we'll know lights are green, yellow, red, all that kind of stuff would be great. And then the other thing would be any, quote, pop-ups, construction, emergency response, any of those kinds of things beyond lights and siren that could be put out, or construction that just got created today but's going to be there for 3 weeks. You know, if there are ways to send information out about that, then we would be able to, like, totally avoid that situation. Same thing with emergency vehicles. The first thing that comes up always from first responders is, how do I even know what your vehicle's doing? Is it stopped? Is it going to move? And then we get to sort of the joke scenarios of, like, who do I give the citation to? There's nobody in the vehicle, right? There's no driver. License and registration, please. Where do I find those? And then, of course, the more serious things that if something happens and they have to actually get in for a medical emergency or something else, how do they do that? And so we've had a lot of interaction with the first responder community, which is usually law enforcement, fire, and EMT. And I always point out, it doesn't matter what city you go to, they are a core of the city. You know, the politicians come and go and other things change, but those are core. And so that's another place where a lot of companies, and again, for us, it's a priority. It's personal for me. But, you know, we're having a lot of interactions with folks to figure out what kind of educational material do we have to create? What kinds of guides do you need? A lot of people focus on the electric part. What part of the battery do you have to stay away from? Cut here, cut there. But as we were just talking, there's all these other issues, right? About if I'm going to pull this vehicle over, how do I know it even sees me or it's going to do what I need to do? And if it pulls over, who do I talk to when there's nobody in the vehicle, right? In the Zoox case, we have microphones and speakers. And so because we have a teleguidance system, a human in another center somewhere monitoring the vehicles in our system, we would know if that vehicle's pulling over and could literally talk directly to an officer or firefighter or somebody who is approaching the vehicle. And by the way, it also could make it easier rather than look for insurance or other kinds of things in the vehicle. We literally could say, what do you want? I'll email that to you. I'll text you whatever you need. And then you even have it in digital form, right? So we're talking about evolution in a bunch of those areas that could be good for everybody as well.
Once specific areas of a city have been mapped out for autonomous drive, it's almost impossible to account for every possible scenario that may threaten the safety of passengers and others on the road. One solution to this safety problem is remote vehicle operation. Felix explained why there is a need for this and how it would work as a safety backup.
Whenever there's a situation that the vehicle doesn't really know or is not completely sure what to do in, so for example, there's a building site somewhere and you have to drive over a line that you normally are not allowed to drive over, we want the vehicle to ask a human operator, okay, I would like to drive here, is that okay? And then the operator can acknowledge that, or the operator can make a proposal which route to take, but we don't want this on a wireless connection to shift around responsibility between the two. So the responsibility need to stay with the vehicle. You definitely have to have a remote operator, so someone that the vehicles can ask. And that, I think, you have to have. And in Europe, it's actually this remote operator is called remote intervention operator, and it's part of the autonomous driving permitting process. So you will have to have it. And we would, like in the first pilots, our plan is also to put in a fifth seat in the vehicle and have a safety driver in the vehicle first and start operating the service. Of course, we will lose money on that service because we can't earn as much money as it costs to pay the driver. But we want to start like that anyway, simply to make sure it's super safe. And then when we reach a level where we are 100% confident that the autonomous vehicle can handle all situation and is smart enough to stop when it doesn't know what to do, first, then we want to take out the safety driver, but then, of course, we will have an operator, but then probably one operator per 10 vehicles or per 20 vehicles. So it's very important that you get fewer operators than vehicles.
So is all that we've heard so far enough to convince consumers to use and maybe even purchase autonomous vehicles? Well, if you're not convinced, maybe listening to Mark break down some of Zoox's over 100 safety innovations will do the trick.
So we just put out a second safety report, and it's just zoox.com/safety. Everybody submitted them to NHTSA. We did our first one on our philosophy. The second one is where you got that statistic that we're talking about, where we identified, you're right, 100 safety innovations that don't exist on cars that are on the road today. In that report, we highlight 9 of them. They fall into 3 areas. One had to do with driving controls. So it gets to our four-wheel steering, braking, and why those matters. It actually talks about the accuracy of our steering, even at speed around corners. Braking, which should be obvious, right? Because it means you can stop shorter, react more quickly, all that kind of stuff. The second category mostly had to do with what we call our safety objective of no single point of failure. That means designing systems at an aviation level of safety. So you have redundancies to make sure that if one system goes, there's a backup and another backup. And so we have 3 examples of that, including monitors that monitor all these different systems in the vehicle. So again, we're bidirectional. If something happens, it sort of cuts off some capability in the front. Won't be bidirectional. It'll just go in the other direction, bypasses those until those things can get fixed. Okay. And the third area are innovations in traditional arenas. So for example, seatbelts and airbags. So in a Zoox vehicle, when you get in, everyone has to be buckled up before it will move. 91% of people wear their seatbelts, but in crashes where people die, 50% of them were not wearing their seatbelt. A Zoox vehicle won't start moving until you're buckled up. So that's built in. And the airbag system, I hope people go to the report, but it's this beautiful sort of curtain airbag that comes down. Again, we have a clean sheet, right? What can we do? Instead of a steering wheel, it's got to come out at you. Well, this is a curtain that comes down. There's a secondary one for each passenger that can come out. And then they're everywhere else, side, back, etc. And you got to read about it because it's so cool. But we actually have an airbag module that can determine where the crash, where that impact is coming from and potential speed. So it can actually determine what airbags need to release when, right, based on what crash is about to occur. So that gets to our prevent that we were talking about, as opposed to reacting after things actually happen.
So autonomous drive is in full development, and safety and privacy are being managed through a variety of avenues. What the future holds for this technology remains to be seen, but it's clear that if safety and privacy can be managed effectively, effects like reduced congestion, pollution, and parking space requirements will become huge benefits. So what do you think? Is society ready for autonomous drive to be employed on a wider scale? Would you feel safe getting into a driverless vehicle? Hopefully this episode has provided some food for thought. This has been a Future Car Expert episode. Thank you for listening.